This episode of WDW Today's off-property WrestleMania special, I don't know if we're allowed to say WrestleMania, but we're going to. It's WrestleMania Sunday, if you are listening to this the day of, is brought to you by Off to Neverland Travel, our travel provider, and we are thrilled with them. You guys got to check them out. Their website is gotoneverland.com, and that's a direct domain that tells them you heard about it right here. So gotoneverland.com, submit for a quote, find out more about them, read their story. I think you're going to really connect with these, not just Disney fans, but Disney experts who want to plan your itinerary, make sure you have a great vacation. And obviously, like we said before, they have their packages, WDW Today Weekend Packages, happening September 29th through October 2nd. So make sure you contact them about that as well. And as Will likes to say,
all you got to do is pack.
All you got to do is pack. And now, on with off-property wrestling style.
Give me a little intro there, Gomer.
Bringing the world to your world. This is WDW Today, Off Property.
WCW Worldwide is on the air. Hi, everyone, I'm Mean Gene Okerlund, coming to you from Walt Disney World in Orlando, Florida. More specifically, this is Pleasure Island, and it's New Year's all the time here. I have with me at this time my very dear, close personal, longtime painter friend, Richard. Richard, are you ready to paint the town?
We've been waiting, Ray Dean. We got your bucket here for you.
Well, let's do her up right, huh? This is my idea of a great New Year's Eve. Let's go to it.
Okay.
Kick it off the action moments from now in the new year.
It's Sunday.
Sunday,
April
from the Thunderdome.
It's April 3rd, 2016, WrestleMania Sunday, and welcome to this episode of WDW Today's Off Property. And I am thrilled, and so is Will, to talk with someone who's a bit of a hero of ours, especially of our childhood. And that, I'm not going to spoil it. I'll leave it, though. It's probably the title of the show. Well, I guess we can just say it. The one, the only, Eric Bischoff. And Eric will tell you what he did and how he brought World Championship Wrestling, WCW, straight to Disney's MGM Studios. Not Hollywood Studios at that point. Still MGM. Classic.
Really, I set this episode up so that I could complain about it not being MGM Studios anymore.
That contract was done?
Yep, that's it.
All right, on with our interview with Eric Bischoff. Happy Mania to all of you. All right, this is a very special episode of WDW Today, a bonus show on this WrestleMania Sunday. When we're thinking about wrestling, we have a lot of wrestling fans who listen to this show, but we also, obviously, we're a Disney podcast, so a lot of people love Walt Disney World who listen to this or planning their next trip, and there's a great correlation between professional wrestling and WCW and what happened at Walt Disney World in the 90s. But when I think about my time as an early teen, I think of Disney, I think of Star Wars, theme parks, all these different things, but I can honestly say, if you combined all the time I spent with those things, it wouldn't even come close to equaling the amount of hours that I spent and logged watching our guests' programming each and every week. Probably, 5 hours plus of programming each and every week that I watch. And we are thrilled to have on the show, again on this WrestleMania Sunday, Mr. Eric Bischoff. Eric, thank you so much for joining us.
It is truly a pleasure to be here. Thank you guys so much. And thank you for donating to the Gary Sinise Foundation. I just learned about his foundation recently from a friend who knows Gary pretty well. I've never met him, had the opportunity to talk to him, but it's a great foundation from what I've learned. And yeah, just feels good to do something good for other people. So
absolutely.
Thank you very much.
No, absolutely. We are happy to do it. And like I said, I'm a wrestling fan. We've actually seen, we've kind of teased this happening. A lot of our audience are wrestling fans. But for our listeners that maybe don't know, what was your role at WCW leading into the days at the Disney parks?
Well, I started at WCW really batting cleanup as an announcer. I was probably the third or fourth string announcer, really. And Tony Schiavone and Jim Ross were there, and they were handling all the primary announce duties, all the lead announcer duties. And I did a lot of the syndicated stuff. I occasionally did interviews from time to time on the primary shows. But like I said, I was batting cleanup. And then as time went on and things changed at WCW, and my role changed, once I got into a management position or a senior management position, then my job was to kind of build the brand and try to find ways to make WCW a more viable company.
Yeah, and for that, a lot of our audience knows who were there in the 90s that WCW had a pretty big presence at Disney. What was your role in leading to those days?
Well, I was, it was my baby, so to speak. I was kind of at the forefront of all of that.
Was there a catalyst that led you to coming up with this idea?
Well, there were several. One of them was just, one of the catalysts was really just the situation at WCW at that time. If you know, wrestling fans remember, you know, going back to the early 90s, even as recent as 93, 94, we would go to arenas to produce our television shows, and oftentimes we had to turn off all the lights because, you know, WCW was just not a hot brand, and we had to turn down all the lights around the ring so the cameras couldn't recognize or couldn't see, I should say, that there was no people in the arena. We'd go to a pretty decent sized arena, and we'd be lucky if we could draw 1,500 people, half of them for free. So I knew that we had to find an environment where we could have a smaller but, you know, vocal crowd, an energetic crowd, and be able to produce the show, quite frankly, in an environment where we didn't have to camouflage the fact that we were such a dismal failure by turning off all the light. So we went to Disney with the idea that even though we were shooting in a smaller soundstage as opposed to a big arena, the fact is that we could light it well, we could, you know, do a lot of the things that we needed to do to dress up the production values of our show. And it just made sense to shoot at the Disney sound stages for a lot of reasons. So I went down to Disney, and a gentleman by the name of Bob Allen, who was the executive in charge of the parks at that time, at least the sound stages, he sat in a room with me, and he loved the idea. But we had to do a tremendous amount of sales to get the other executives at, you know, at Disney on board with it. And it was not an easy task.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Was there a lot of apprehension from some of the other management, you know, bringing professional wrestling where dreams come true at the happiest place on earth?
It was bizarre. You know, looking back at it now, and I give a lot of credit to Bob Allen, if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have been able to pull it off because I really did have his support. But when I sat, you know, I probably sat down in a room with about 15 or 20 Disney executives down in Orlando for my initial meeting. And all but one of them, and that being Bob Allen, looked at me like I had three eyes and horns. They couldn't really understand the fit whatsoever. And when they finally agreed to let us give it a try, it was really a trial basis. The rules and conditions under which we were allowed to shoot at Disney were really, looking back at it now, it's funny, you know, but they wanted us to bring the wrestlers in backstage on a bus. They didn't want them driving in separately, which I kind of understand.
Right.
Because there was a lot of us. You know, this was not a typical television show.
Sure.
We probably had 60 or 80 wrestlers, you know, in that soundstage on any given day. But they wanted us to come in a bus, but they wanted us to paper off the windows so nobody could see that they were wrestlers. And the rules were, once we were on, you know, the soundstage or in the soundstage, they didn't want the wrestlers walking around the park.
Scaring tourists.
they just didn't know. You know, everybody has a perception of what a wrestler is or how wrestlers are. So we had to come in on a bus with the windows papered off so no one could see who was in it. Once we got to the soundstage, wrestlers were not allowed to walk around the park, and we were not allowed to film anything outside of the soundstage. We were allowed to use the stock Disney Open that was supplied to us by Disney MGM Studios. But that was really the only identifier that we were allowed to use because Disney just did not really feel comfortable being associated with a wrestling property. But what's cool about it is that after we shot down there, I think we shot twice, probably the first time in the spring and then maybe later on in the summer. After the second or third time, they realized that, you know, we weren't going to frighten children and, you know, tip cars over and, you know, ruin people's experience at the park. they lifted all the restrictions, and we were then able to shoot vignettes in and around the park, with all the iconic stuff that they wouldn't let us near originally. And they did a lot of research. Disney did a lot of research at our events and found that the guests really, really had a blast.
I'm
so
sure.
I think, you know, it took time. It took about a year before, you know, everybody got real comfortable. But it was a process, and it was a fun one.
Yeah, I was trying to find some episodes online, watching, you know, I think, a worldwide episode where it starts with, you know, Mean Gene Okerlund opening it from Pleasure Island. And then I flipped over and watched the Nitro episode that I'd like to talk about in a little bit. But even that had, you know, Tony Schiavone and Larry Zbyszko wearing Mickey Mouse polo shirts. Was associating that brand, that Disney brand, important to you when it came to not legitimizing, I guess is the wrong word, but making maybe a different audience for WCW?
Well, again, you know, fans sometimes forget the context and where WCW was at that time. From my perspective, I knew right away that wrestling fans, hardcore wrestling fans, would have kind of the same reaction to us being at Disney
right.
as the Disney executives had at the idea of wrestlers coming onto their property. It was just an odd fit. And I knew that wrestling fans, the hardcore fans, would probably not appreciate it. But that wasn't my biggest concern at that time. At that time, my biggest concern was to change the perception of WCW, which had been drugged through the mud prior to me getting on board. Bill Watts did a very good job of doing a lot of stupid stuff that really harmed the brand, so much so that Turner Broadcasting was within probably hours of pulling the plug on WCW completely. So I had to change the image. I had to change the perception. More importantly, I had to get Madison Avenue in New York, where all the advertisers live. I had to get Madison Avenue on board with my product. And I knew the best way to do that would be to co-brand with an established, comfortable brand that advertisers accepted and embraced. So the idea was more strategic than it was anything else, because I really had to change, again, the perception of the brand.
Another thing that you were able to do was signing Hulk Hogan in a big spectacle at MGM. Could you tell me a little bit about that experience? And was any of his interest in coming from the fact that, you know, you had Disney and Turner together on this?
Well, it's interesting, because we had started shooting our worldwide shows down in Disney. I think we had probably taped 1, 2, maybe 3 cycles down there. And then one of those cycles, Hulk Hogan was filming Thunder in Paradise at the Disney MGM Studios
right.
in Orlando. So he was in the same place we were. And I think it was just, you know, it was timing. It was coincidence. I think, you know, Hulk was interested in coming back to wrestling. He had left WWE under, you know, a little bit of a controversial kind of environment.
Sure.
And I think with us being in Disney, you know, right down the road from where Hulk lives at Clearwater Beach, and the fact that we were trying to brand ourselves as a positive, family-oriented property, you know, I think it definitely had a lot to do with it.
Yeah, many of our listeners attended tapings. When I kind of floated out there, we're going to be doing an episode on this. A lot of people sent in their pictures. And while I was researching it, though, you had a non... I'm a wrestling fan. I've been going to wrestling events, honestly, pretty much since the NWO happened, is when I became like a giant fan, as a lot of us did. But when you had a audience full of non-wrestling fans, and a lot of times families that were coming just to Disney World, was there any bit of prodding you had to do? Was it different having to get those fans to interact with a storyline or a gimmick that they maybe were completely unfamiliar with?
Yeah, that was, you know, look, there were a lot of positives about being at Disney, but there were some challenges as well. And what you just pointed out was one of the bigger challenges, because people were there to have a good time. They were there. They wanted to see the wrestlers. They wanted to see the action. But to your point, a lot of them weren't familiar with the storylines and weren't familiar with the characters. So you didn't get the same type of reaction out of them, out of the audience, that you would if you were in an arena full of people that paid $20 or $30 for a ticket because they were passionate about the storylines and passionate about the characters. So that really was a challenge. The other challenge was, because of economies of scale and that were necessitated by shooting down there at Disney, we had to shoot 3 or 4 or 5 episodes in one day. And a lot of times matches were out of sequence. We had to be really careful about the way we laid out certain things in front of the audience, because we were shooting sometimes, you know, 13 weeks at a time.
Was it all leaking out still at that point? No, a lot. That's a big problem with wrestling now with the internet. But in 1993, 94, was it still already getting out there what was happening?
Yeah, well, you had dirt sheets back then. You know, what they refer to as dirt sheets.
Right, of course.
But it, essentially newsletters. And yeah, the information would leak out there, and that would spread. It wasn't as viral as it is today in terms of magnitude, but it still happened. And
did it bother
you? Something that we worked really hard to prevent.
Yeah, so did that bother you? As I know your kind of aspirations were, like I said, Madison Avenue and sort of the mainstream audience. Did it bother you, though, that it affected wrestling fans maybe in a not-so-friendly way?
Well, I didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
It wasn't ideal. If we were filling arenas and we were able to produce a high quality show with great production values and do it in front of, you know, even 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000 people, I would have much preferred that. But we weren't able to do that. So it was, I hate to even say, a lesser of two evils, because certainly I didn't consider shooting at Disney MGM Studios an evil in any shape
just
or
your
form.
Audience,
it was a great opportunity. But it was, you know, when I looked at the audience, I said, okay, well, either we do this or we continue. We either shoot at Disney or we continue producing a show that is embarrassing because of the situation, and embarrassing in terms of its production values, because, quite frankly, you couldn't get anybody to buy a ticket to see a WCW event at that time.
I have a question, kind of going back to how you mentioned there was a lot of rules at the beginning, but then they kind of did away with those after a year. What was it like being in the park in that establishment at that time, you know, during lunch breaks, or when you're shooting in an environment like that? Was there anything unique that would happen, or any craziness going on behind the scenes?
No, not really. It really wasn't, you know, the talent. You know, for the most part, in fact, I can't remember ever having an incident down there with talent that was, you know, inappropriate or embarrassing or uncomfortable for our company in any way. So everybody, you know, handled it really well. And after the newness of it and the fear of it, because a lot of guys were, well, not the wrestlers so much, they didn't care. As long as they got paid, there was a ring, they were happy. But you know, my management, you know, and the executives that were part of the team, and the, you know, the booking committee and all that. Once they kind of got down there and accepted it and realized, wow, this is really kind of cool for a lot of reasons. All of a sudden, we were having barbecues at night when we were done, you know, filming during the day. We would all get together. We stayed off premises. We would have a get together at the pool and barbecue, and it was very much of a family affair. And more wrestlers would bring their families down to the television tapings, which they would never do, you know, when we're out on the road. But, you know, all of a sudden it was just kind of a bonding and a good family environment for quite a while down there. And for me personally, I did stay on the property at the Yacht Club.
Very nice.
And as did Ric Flair and his family.
The Nature
and,
Boy.
Yeah. You know, yeah, when we weren't taping, it was, you know, my kids were really young at the time, and they would bring their friends down, and we just had such a wonderful experience shooting down there in so many different ways.
That's awesome. That's a great story. Now, come a few years later, I guess a year or two later, the flagship show came to town when Nitro came to town August 5th, and I just watched a good portion of that because it's on the WWE Network. It was easy for me to pull up. You're shooting at the gates now. If last time they were saying lock the door, don't tell anyone you're here, you're papering up the windows. Come 1996, you are front and center at the front of the gates with all Disney brand, the Tower of Terror overlooking the ring. What was that experience like? And you know, that was, you know, for you, this was as the weeks after the NWO stuff started to get kicking. How did that feel to know that you had come already this far so short?
Well, it was phenomenal. And honestly, the reason that we were there in 96 was because, being a part of Turner Broadcasting, it was a mandate that I use Turner Broadcasting production people. I didn't have my own production crew. I mean, I did have a director and a couple producers that were exclusive to me. But, you know, cameraman, audio, rigging, you know, everything else that goes into a show, it was mandated that I use Turner personnel, who, quite frankly, also worked on basketball and baseball and, you know, anything else. So when the Olympics came to Atlanta in 96, all of Turner production and Turner Sports was dedicated to Olympic coverage. And all of the freelancers in and around Atlanta were all booked for, and the good ones, were all booked for Olympic coverage. So we had nowhere to shoot our show.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
We couldn't get a crew. So that's why, you know, we contacted Disney and said, hey, you know, we're going to shoot a live show at Sideshow at CT. You know, can we do it, you know, on location and do it outside? And by that time, we had a great relationship with Disney, and it was no problem. But it was fun, too. You know, that was a memorable night. And I'll tell you a quick story.
Yeah, please.
You probably saw it, but there was, and again, people forget or don't know that, you know, until Nitro came along, the backstage area, the whole production area, was never seen on camera. The audience never saw behind that curtain. They only saw what went on in the arena. And it wasn't until I kind of revealed the backstage area and the rest of the arena, including the production area, and included that in the format of our show, that people ever got a chance to get beyond that curtain. So the fact that we were doing that was a new experience, and it had never been done before. But at that particular on that particular show in August, there was a scene where, you know, the NWO, you know, kind of ran roughshod over everybody and ended up in the backstage production area. And Kevin Nash picked up Rey Mysterio Jr. and threw him like a long dart into the side of our Turner Broadcasting production truck.
Yeah, it's a famous shot now for wrestling fans, yeah.
Well, what happened were people that were living in and around Orlando, and some of them in proximity to the park, called cops. I'm not exaggerating.
Oh, wow.
They called the cops, and we're sitting there filming the show, and I believe the show was almost over, and I'm hearing sirens, and I'm seeing police officers, and a fire truck, and I'm going, what in the heck?
So the viewers were calling? The live viewers at home in Orlando were calling? Is that who it was?
The live viewers at home called and said there's an assault happening at the Disney MGM studio.
That's the greatest thing I've
out
ever
of
heard.
Control. Oh, it was awesome. You know?
And that did, I mean, not to, you know, this is a Disney Parks podcast, but not to get too, you know, deep into wrestling. But, you know, that whole angle, I know it's been, you've talked about it a million times. I'm glad we could have you on this and hear some different stories. It changed the game for wrestling. It brought in, you know, I'm from Atlanta. I was raised in Atlanta. So WCW in 1996, 1997, 1998. Was, you know, religion for a lot of us, almost. It was amazing and ushered in still what we're seeing. So Eric, you know, we couldn't thank you enough for that and for being a huge part of a lot of us growing up and respecting it as an incredible form of entertainment. And it's great. Wrestling though and theme parks now have had some, you know, more ties. I know you worked some with TNA, and you know, we saw TNA and Impact. Actually, I was working for Nickelodeon when Jeff Jarrett was scouting TNA. And, you know, we see that end up at Universal Studios, not necessarily as branded as you do, because you brand it with Universal or you brand it with Disney. Do you think we're going to see, you know, wrestling ever have really a presence back in those kind of arenas? You were seeing big shows, you know, for WWE. We're seeing TNA, you know, doing what they're doing, occasionally coming back. But you even have the fact that I don't think Disney as a company, or in possibly Universal, but really Disney as a company, would maybe welcome wrestling back in with open arms. It just doesn't seem like that's in their nature at this point. They're not really producing television, but do you think there is a natural fit that could continue on with wrestling and theme park relations, I guess?
It's hard to say. I certainly have no feel anymore what the current thinking is at the theme parks. I know, you know, the little bit of time I spent at Universal, they were pretty flexible and very easy, and it was an easy experience. But, you know, I really can't imagine that we'll see any kind of significant presence again at the theme parks, just because, you know, I just don't see it for a lot of reasons. I just don't see it.
Well, it's a changing of also the product. Even when the NWO was there and it was the early days, it was still, you know, as clean. I mean, it's clean now. I mean, even WWE is PG as it can be, even though you have, you know, certain things happen from time to time. But I still just don't see that. A lot of it is due to the fact that, you know, those kind of, that sort of family version of wrestling, even if it was more serious and more adult-centered, has kind of gone away. But, Eric, again, it's been an honor to speak with you. We'd love to have you back on whenever you feel like telling any more Disney stories. And if people are interested in how they can follow you, or if there's anything you'd like to plug, feel free. This is your time.
Well, on Facebook, you can find me at Eric Bischoff Controversy.
Yep.
And on Twitter, it's at eBischoff. I like to. I really appreciate, you know, you guys doing this and supporting the Gary Sinise Foundation. It just it makes this kind of thing even more fun. I always have fun talking about wrestling, but when you can do something that's positive, it's even more fun. So fans can go on there and support the effort, and I appreciate that.
All right. Thank you, Eric, so much for joining us, and it's been our pleasure. Thanks a lot.
All right. You guys be well.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Eric, and thanks to all of you guys for listening. Obviously, a big thanks to the greatest band in podcasting, Off Kilter. And a shout out to our friends at Virtual Mickey. Check them out at virtualmickey.com. They have lots of great apps. You can find out all about their apps and whatever they do. I'll tell you a couple. Let me tell you a little about the apps, Will.
Yeah, I want to hear some apps.
All right, I got Days to Go.
There's an app for that.
There is an app for that. That counts down in a creative way each trip to Walt Disney World. It helps you, you know, get excited really for what's happening. They have plenty of other great ones. I got a whole list here, Will. Let's go through it. We got
Theme Park News
Disney Edition. We got DVC by D Points, which if you're a DVC member, the app is for you. Calculates the number of points needed for you to stay at the resort of your choice in seconds. And they have a lot of great other options. Check them out at virtualmickey.com. And of course, as I said earlier, this episode brought to you by our buddies at Off to Neverland. Go to neverland.com, and we will talk to you on the next show. And Will, all you got to do
is pack. I'm getting more and more musical each week.
Yeah, especially this episode. You're going to get a chair shot for that.
I'll try to find a sound effect on it. All right.
We'll talk to you on the next show.
Bye.